TFM.
This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, your source for the best audiobooks, including unabridged readings of the latest novels from the incredible family of Star Trek authors. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help this show and the network at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 227, way bigger than Praxis. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. In this episode, we discuss the expansion of the Star Trek universe, using interviews by Alex Kurtzman from the Star Trek Emmy promotion campaign as the basis for exploring Section 31, Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Prodigy, and... oh, let's not forget Starfleet Intelligence. We have a wide-ranging Trek discussion for you, so let's step into the Ready Room. Well, Larry, I thought I would find you here in the Ready Room because with this explosion of new Star Trek content, kind of like Praxis blowing up in our face, I think the Ready Room is the safest place to be these days. So I'm glad you're here because we can talk about that explosion.
Chris, this is even bigger than there is so much Star Trek on. The explosion is so much bigger than Praxis. These concussion rings are in three dimensions.
Oh, wow.
And not just a single ring, you know, like it's a flaming baton at a really high class high school homecoming halftime show.
And they're in rainbow colors, Larry.
Yeah.
Just like the Star Trek universe emblem that they're now using everywhere in
social
media.
Well, of course, because it is 2020.
Right. It shows the whole spectrum of Star Trek content.
So. Well, the whole spectrum of Star Trek content sounds like a great tagline for what we want to talk about.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Tonight.
So we were thinking about topics for today. And of course, we want to talk about Lower Decks. We're getting close to the middle of the season. We've been through four episodes, including Moist Vessel, which we talked about last time, speculating on just what that title might refer to.
Who knew that Moist Vessel was code for there will be a Tellarite, but his name will be Durango?
Exactly. Or I was watching that.
As one of my Twitter followers said, maybe it's like Durango, like two. With an apostrophe.
They forgot to put the apostrophe in there, right?
Yeah.
And also, now we know that the entire universe sits on the face of a giant koala. Who knew, right?
Exactly.
But anyway, so we have one more episode to go before we reach the midpoint of the first season of Lower Decks. So
okay.
I thought, why don't we wait one more episode of The Ready Room to talk about that so we can see what happens. And instead, we can talk about the overall expansion of the Star Trek universe because Alex Kurtzman did some interviews recently with Deadline, with Variety, as part of the push for the Emmys, which we talked about last time.
Right.
And he talked about a number of series coming out, as well as the thought process behind expanding the franchise. And I thought that would be a nice topic to talk about.
The FYC tour, as we say here in town, the four-year consideration tour for Emmy voters. And if the rest of the world happens to pick up on these crumbs, then they can't stop it.
It is difficult to keep anything secret these days, Larry, in social media.
So. Well, you know, it's Variety and Deadline and everybody that insists on having a webpage. Otherwise, who would read the Dead Tree Media versions anymore? But nope, they sneak it out there online like people are going to find it and read it.
I mean, you know, Variety and Deadline, they have some clout in the industry, but They're not Starfleet intelligence, Larry.
No. Thank God they're not Starfleet intelligence. Is that stuck? Is there a sticker or a t-shirt or a hashtag for Starfleet intelligence the way there is for the other side of the room or anything else that we've ever...
I don't know if people actually catch on
with that or not.
I don't think it's quite stuck in that way. But for me, it's just always stuck in my head since that day you were in Arizona, guy was in the back of the room. Yeah.
Well, I don't think the guy in the back of the room was the guy from Starfleet Intelligence, but Jesus. Yeah, I'll never forget that. I'm driving home. I'm back in LA. I've driven from Phoenix. It's like a 5-6 hour drive, and I'm driving up the thing and I start seeing, you know, Twitter flashes that I announce. This is before 2015. This is before the Discovery. I want to say this was around 2013 or 2014 that Larry Nemechek has just announced at Phoenix Comic Con that CBS is going to premiere a new Star Trek on Netflix. And I announced it in my panel. It's like, thank you. And some blog named Starfleet Intelligence announces this. And I'm like, what? What I had said was what everybody was saying, friends in licensing everywhere were saying, that tell everybody to watch Star Trek constantly 24/7 on Netflix so the meters will run
to get hits and views and all that,
right? It was like, if you're on vacation, if you're home all day, if you're not home all day, just turn it on Star Trek and let it go episode, like, just let the ticker run to show good numbers.
And the reason.
That's
exactly
all I said.
Yeah, I remember all of this, and we used to talk about it here on the show. And the reason was to have the fans show the studio that there was an appetite for a new Star Trek series so that maybe they would develop one in the years to come.
This is six, seven years ago. Just think how far original programming on the networks, on the streaming networks, have come. I mean, we were still reeling from HBO and Showtime and all having, you know, Game of Thrones, and, or having The Sopranos and then Game of Thrones. I mean, was Game of Thrones out yet? That may have been pre-Game of Thrones.
I think it
But the point
may
was,
have been pre, yeah.
Turning your Netflix you already bought on and letting it run on Star Trek 24/7 is cheaper than, you know, running out and even buying DVD sets and Blu-ray sets and that kind of thing. Like, anyway, didn't mean to hijack our topic today. But yes, when we make fun of Star... So some blog who comes, you know... I don't know. There's no name. You can always tell the quality of a blog when no one wants to admit they work on it or a web page or whatever. I know a lot of fandom came out of handles on whatever era it is, whether it was like, you know, FidoNet message boards, or it was Twitter handles, or
Q-Link. CompuServe.
Yes. Or ham radios in the 20s. I don't know. CB radios. Well, you know, but the
those
people,
ham
the
radios
ones,
were made with bearskins and stone knives, Larry.
Yes. And I know a lot of my friends, they love their handles rather than just putting their name up. But if it's something that's trying to get some attention and respect and they don't use their real names, I'm kind of... And a lot of times people, it's the old Hollywood thing. If they've got a really ethnic, quote, I'm using air quotes here, a really ethnic name for... mostly Anglicized America, they might want something that's easier to remember than the ethnic name from wherever else in the world they're from. And I can't blame them on that. But most of the time, if you're trying to put yourself out there as a respected source and get some credibility, don't hide behind some, and don't even like have your name in the fine print anywhere. I mean, somewhere along the way, tell us who you are. Anyway, that was the case with Starfleet Intelligence. I was like, who the hell is this guy or gal? And I never could find out who it was. And then guess what? Within a year or so, it kind of, just like the coronavirus, it just disappeared. It was like a miracle.
It's like magic.
It was like magic. Anyway, sorry for the sidebar there.
It's actually a good segue, though, Larry, to the one news item that we're going to talk about before we get into the Kurtzman discussion.
Okay.
You did. And that news item is the announcement by CBS that in the lead up to the October 15th premiere of Star Trek Discovery's third season, they're going to be airing the first season of Star Trek Discovery on CBS proper starting on September 24th, and it's going to air at 10 p.m. That's the time slot. So it's interesting that they've decided to do this. We're going to have Star Trek on one of the classic big three TV networks once again in the U.S. What do you think this potentially means for the future of what I'm going to call mainstream Star Trek, meaning you don't have to go to a streaming service to watch it. It's just out right there to the general public.
Or the non-stream. The mainstream right non-stream. Well, it's good news. It's, you know, I think it's great that when CBS has, I mean, what's the harm? They're showing all their other decrepitly old and ancient Star Trek. So why not the first season? Way back in 2017. If this year feels like not 6 months, but 6 years since we all went into lockdown, you all have been there before sooner than that in Japan. But mm-hmm. 2017 and 2015, when All Access was announced and, oh, by the way, we're going to throw some Star Trek thing on there that we'll figure out later. That was November. That was like right before Thanksgiving 2015, which is amazing right now. We weren't even to the 50th anniversary yet the next year. But it's kind of the thing that's been mentioned. I mean, it's been out floating around out there. It's a kind of thing that CBS and the other terrestrial old school broadcast networks have done in the past when they've brought a couple of, I think they even had The Good Fight at one point. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't think it's the first time it's been done, but it's certainly not a lot of this news and some of our topics tonight, I'm laughing because it's like, it's all things that have been mentioned, but for some reason, there's like a lot of news about things that are being said a little stronger and louder than they were said 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But but it makes all kinds of sense. For one thing, we will finally have actual Nielsen eyeball, as much as a Nielsen's can be locked down, but better, something better than like the Parrot Analytics measuring of internet popularity. But we'll have actual commercial breaks, Nielsen ratings for actual eyeballs in the U.S. on Discovery, on a Kurtzman era show. Mm-hmm. And who knows, you know, it'll be summer. It's pandemic fill-in reruns. And it's 10 o'clock on Thursday, which it's not quite the graveyard. It's almost the graveyard of old school original series. But no, it'll be great to have actual numbers, whatever they are. And it's the old, we've come so far from the hoop about people, whether they're just complaining or whether, you know, God bless them, they actually cannot afford to take a streaming channel like All Access or add on to their pile of existing channels. But this will be finally new Star Trek on wherever you're getting it. Your broadcast, much less cable or streaming. So totally All Access for real. Anybody can watch it and it can be measured. That's what this means to me.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what all that opens up.
I'm curious what the measurement will be worth, given that it's coming on mm-hmm. at 10 o'clock and mm-hmm. fans who really wanted to see it have already seen it on streaming or they've bought the Blu-ray set right or whatever. So the numbers are probably going to be low because mm-hmm. it's not like it's first run. But if you look at those numbers as here are numbers mm-hmm. for people who aren't diehard Star Trek fans, who decided this was something they were interested in seeing in that sense
right
could be interesting.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and this is where it comes up again. And by the way, one of the outlets in Canada has had actual Canadian version of Nielsen's ratings. There have been times and we keep getting reports and they've done fairly well. Now that's just Canada. Just kidding, Canada. But we've had, so there's like one in the whole world so far, there's been like one tiny little subset of viewer numbers that are traditional rating type ratings. And they haven't mm-hmm. done, they haven't been bad for that segment of Canada. It's Canada and then it's a segment of Canada. But yeah, this will be the first time. And Canada, who now loves to say that they had Star Trek originally 2 days before the United States did in 1966, which I think is hysterical. But no, it'll be interesting to see what those real numbers are. But here's the thing. I think setting the expectation bar very low is not just smart, but it's probably very accurate. But we live in a time here, Chris, where graybeards like you and me, and even young beards who think they know everything, all over the spectrum of commentary, what passes for commentary on Star Trek and fan activity online. I mean, I always say there's way more to Star Trek than what's at a convention. There's way more of the Star Trek than what you see at a convention audience or what you see online and all your boards, even the boards you don't go to and the pages that you're not a part of. The toxic YouTubers maybe that you don't believe in, but they do have an audience. That's all a fraction of Star Trek that's out there. And the newer shows, it's like everything else. There's a cutting edge. There's like the cutting edge is like second wave. And then there's all the people that are just going to find it when they find it, who consider themselves Star Trek fans, but they don't live, you know, live, eat, breathe, and diet every day. It's like politics. It's like anything in culture. There, people find things on their own speed. So we can sit here and say, oh, it's probably going to be people who want stumble in and accidentally find Star Trek. And maybe they're not, you know, all the real fans have either watched it or they've declared war and they're not going to watch, you know. But how many people didn't watch because it was a financial issue, or maybe they didn't have the tech? I think there are a lot of people who consider themselves fans who are going to watch it. And then, yes, there will be lots of unwashed people who they loved to watch the original series 30 years ago and they've never had anything to do with Star Trek since. Or they grew up with Next Generation and they've got kids and family now. I mean, there's all kinds of people in all kinds of parts of their life, what I'm saying here. So who knows what the numbers will be for this or any of those. There's two reality shows, I think, ahead of
Discovery. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm wondering how many viewers of Love Island are going to stick around for Discovery right afterwards.
The lead-in will be interesting to watch, too. Well, we dropped 47% of our audience from Love Island, right? So what I'm saying here is let's not get trapped in our little boxes of thought. It could be all kinds of things, but I'm not expecting any huge numbers. It'll be interesting to see. But I'm hopefully we won't have a whole wave of people going, see? 17 people in the whole country watched it. I told you it was a, you know, it's like, no, guys, here are the parameters. Here are the facts of the case. Here's the situation. True. But it is out there. And who knows what the first, maybe there'll be word of mouth. I'm sure CBS will promote the hell out of it. So, hey, guys, look at this old show we've got out of the basement. It's all of 3 years old.
It's old from the days when you could go outside.
Oh, yes.
You know, if CBS were really clever with their marketing, what they would do is for Love Island leading into it, they would insert Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler into the show so that you've got that connection to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And then you roll them right in. Yeah.
Love Asteroid. Yeah. Or something. I don't know.
Well, one thing that popped into my head, Larry, was that the naysayers out there, you know, that there are going to be some of them who try to spin this as, okay, so CBS is exploring how they can get out of this crappy failure of a streaming service that they've put together, and they're going to put this out there to, it's like a filler so they can abandon the platform so no one will have to pay for Star Trek anymore. Someone's going to spin it that way, I'm sure. And of course, that makes no sense because the market is very clearly going towards streaming services, so they need to continue to develop what they're doing, not to look away. And any smart business person would be looking at it that way. But, you know, I do feel, as we're talking about here, it could be like an open door to expansion of the Star Trek fan base.
Yeah.
Because you're going to bring in people who can stumble upon it and they don't have to go and subscribe to a service to watch it, which would mean they already know about it anyway.
Yeah. And my head canon on this tells me, you know, all I think about is CSI, is NCIS and Blue Bloods. Like the CBS is the Tiffany Network, you know, the older skewing. Everybody sits around still watches TV at a certain schedule at night, like the aging demographic. But it is just because it's on CBS doesn't mean it's not also on all the CBS cable channels. It's not on, you know, all the time shifting you can copy. It's on all the CBS streaming. You can still watch it streaming. You're just not paying and there will be commercials. Oh, the other thing that occurred to me was the episodes that run longer than an hour, if they're,
oh, good point.
You know, they may have they have to strip a scene or two, or they'll just keep referring to that. I was just talking about this the other day. Was it Vaulting Ambition that was a 38-minute?
There is one short one.
One of the Terran Empire shows is like 38 minutes long, which they can have 20 minutes of commercial.
They'll love that.
Yeah. They'll make up for that for the ones that go a minute over. But it's broadcast, and they'll have to, you know, they'll have to coordinate with local stations and station ID. And you're listening to KUFP, Sol 3.
Do you remember how, like, older CBS shows, I used to joke that it would be the name of a person and a comma, and then whatever they do. There's, like, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. There's Walker, Texas Ranger. So for this, they could do Michael Burnham, Starfleet Trader.
Yes. With a T, not a D.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not Cyrano Jones, Starfleet Trader, but yes. Harry Mudd,
yeah, Cyrano Jones, Starfleet traitor, Michael Burnham, Starfleet traitor. Yes.
Yes. Harry Mudd, Starfleet traitor, or something. I don't know.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting. But again, I know that was floating around out there. They said, you know, and we could always take our streaming content and use it as a summer replacement. Do summer replacement shows? I don't think so. But that's a dead, sad to see gone concept, like Saturday morning cartoons or something. But yeah. Right. It's another interesting thing, and who can blame them? It's so I love how that press release though has the two reality shows, including Love Island, and then Star Trek Discovery. It's all about the marketing, right? And the Star Trek Discovery in its broadcast premiere. You know, it's like having 15 premieres for a movie. It's its West Coast premiere. It's its East Coast premiere. It's its Comic-Con premiere. It's its premiere for left-handed people under 4 feet tall. It's, you know, who wear green all the time or, you know, purple all the time, whatever.
Well, Larry, in music, vinyl is coming back. LPs are popular. Mm-hmm. Just wait when you get to video, you know, 5 years from now, it's going to be Star Trek Discovery on its VHS premiere.
I can't wait. I want to see the little display boxes and shelves with the goodies you can, yeah.
You've never seen the Shinjo until you've seen it on tape.
You've never seen the Shinzo until you've seen it with static pause lines.
Right. That would be great.
Be kind. Rewind. Okay.
All right. Okay, well, let's go ahead.
Viacom's just trying to bring Blockbuster back. That's all that's behind this.
Oh,
yeah.
There's always an ulterior motive.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk about the main topic here.
Wait, there's a main topic? That wasn't it?
That was not it. And the things that Kurtzman has said about the expansion of Star Trek, it's, you know, easy. This is how I've been talking about it for a few years now, actually. It's easy to look at Star Trek's rapid growth and worry that they might be doing too much too quickly, mm-hmm. oversaturating mm-hmm. the market. And you could be, if you want to be cynical about it, you could think of it like we're expanding just for the sake of expansion because they feel like they can make more money. Here's a property we've got. Let's just do whatever we can with
it. Well, CBS did have the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
Which is all about constant eternal expansion.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I meant the little T, the little B, the little, yeah.
Ah, okay. Uh-huh. So, you know, what can we do? We have this big property, Star Trek, and we can launch a network and we can keep making new shows and then we can make deals with other networks, like with Prodigy, with Nickelodeon, which I know is still in the CBS family. But
mm-hmm. thank God we can finally just say Prodigy without asterisking.
Right.
You know.
So sometimes I feel like I worry a little bit that they're doing too much too quickly. And it's going to burn out. But Kurtzman did an interview with Deadline in the lead up to the mm-hmm. Emmys, kind of promoting things. And one thing that he was asked about is, how do you differentiate each show? And he said there are quite a few ways. And I think the idea for us is that it isn't just about expansion for the sake of expansion. It's actually about exploring different corners of the universe mm-hmm. in the same way that the short treks explore different corners of the world of Star Trek. The idea being that each show should have its own unique identity, and you should not be thinking that you can get from one show what you can get in another.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on to say, everything has to feel different, unique, special, and specific, and yet you want it all to be of a piece and tie into the larger Trek universe. So it's been a very coordinated effort on a lot of people's parts to make sure that the shows feel different and are about different things mm-hmm. and are saying different things and feel different and look different and sound different. So that's been really fun and really rewarding. That's what he said. So how do you feel about this, Larry? Do you feel like they're achieving this? And one question I also think when I look at who's in charge of the different shows is, are they really mixing it up enough in terms of the writing teams mm-hmm. and the producers and such?
So my first reaction to that nice long Kurtzman quote is there. He's basically elaborating on stealing my line that I've said for years, which I was just re-quoting everybody else who says every time there's a new Star Trek, it's got to be exactly the same as everything else, except totally different.
Yeah.
Which is basically what he just said. You've got to have the core, or else you've got to have the Roddenberry thing, the Roddenberry vision to it, but it's got to be different. It's just our definition of our I can't say guardrails because that's my canon metaphor, but it's related to that. It's the parameters of what it is, the tone, the vibe, the media now even, the point of view, the location, the time as well as place. It's got to be Star Trek, but there's so many, you know, you were just in the same paradigm that Next Generation, some people loved the original series so much and wanted more of it that they didn't get what more could be, and they were fearful mm-hmm. of what busting this open would look like. Now we look back and go, that was the key to having a franchise back when people didn't think about franchises so much. At the same time, even that was viewed through a lens of 1 hour show or whatever, 1 hour shows, full season, old American seasons on a commercial basis. Because everything that's happening right now, number one, he's been talking about this for years. So I'm still understanding why it's new. It was news for the Emmy voters. Go for it. Yay, yay, yay. Please vote for Star Trek stuff. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, it's going to be ironic if Short Treks wins the Emmy for in its category of short and limited series, whatever. It means that after 55 years, nearly, the two shows that the two Star Treks that might win an Emmy for as a series, not for, an actor even, which has never happened. Mm-hmm. There've been nominations for Leonard and whatnot. But the only winner for an actual series and not just a tech, a creative era, would be the animated series and then Short Treks. Like, the two asterisks of the franchise are the ones that won the series. It would be awesome if that happened. Yeah, I'd love it for all of them to win things. But point here being that this whole thing about we're in a time now where the business model has opened up this ability. First, we're adapting these short seasons, which drives people crazy. And to your point, right off the bat, people were worried about overexposure. But when people, there's only 10 or 12 or 13 episodes and people are waiting a year, year and a half, even without a pandemic, to see new series.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how that's not leading to burnout. You're leaving them hungry for more. So,
sure.
So there's, and they're not even up till now overlapping this 23 weeks of new Trek from Lower Decks into Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Still
overlapping, and it's unprecedented, but it's still not overlapping. So I'm not worried about the burnout thing, but I'm just amazed that we live in a time we have all this, these elements to play with. We have these business models, we have attitudes, we have budgeting models, business models, production and distribution models that let us do things all over the map. And they hadn't even got there yet. They hadn't even explored like a true 2 to 3 hour, TV movie, or maybe a 2, 3, 4 hour miniseries, really limited series yet, which mm-hmm. I think the con yeah. to Rain in Hell, that's the name of Greg Cox's novel, but the planet side con.
Right.
This is City Alpha 5. That series, I think, they were talking about having it be a 3, 4, 5 hour episode.
Right. Whatever. That's right.
So anyway, but that's it. That's a late, we're talking about just going to 10 in short series and now an animated. We're about to have another tone of animation. So everybody who's a lot of people welcome, it's the kind of thing that I was wanting to, I didn't know how it would happen and I knew why it wouldn't happen. But I've been yelling for this since like the 90s, since Next Gen took off. And DS9 came out, and all three Berman spinoffs until Enterprise were all in the same basic time frame.
Yeah.
At the time, thinking, well, they're not going to do anything else because all the money's invested in the overhead here, the costumes, props.
Right.
And that they're not going to sit down and design a whole different era. And they did. And that's why Enterprise blew me away. And that's why I couldn't understand why people were so pissed about it. It's like, shut up. You know how rare this is? They're having to suck it up and spend money and time to design a whole new era, another corner.
But so many of the fans would have been happier if it had just been a continuation of Voyager, and they didn't spend the money.
lots of fans would, but it's got to be a viable, it had to be viable sure. business on the old model of 26 episodes right. a year, unless it goes to a feature, and then the feature is a whole different thing. And there was no reward for the DS9 and the Voyager or Enterprise casts like there was for the Next Generation and the original, because they right. were unfortunately not the first to come along after, so it's like all of those reasons are why things didn't happen. And the numbers were there. And then the audience was splintering and yada, yada. We've talked about this a million times. So we're in a time now were all the things I wanted to see. I knew we were never going to get to, well, I had a hope during Enterprise, but I knew we were never going to get a series set on Kronos or Romulus, much less, at least you got to go there once or twice. We were never going to get to Teller Prime.
Oh, you know who's more upset about that than you, Larry? Durango.
Yeah. I saw somebody talking about, hey, which Durango do you prefer? It's like Troy's character from...
Troy's from Fistful of Data.
Yeah.
Right. Durango.
Versus,
yeah.
But that's not Durango. That's Durango. This is Durango over here. So anyway, this whole news about we're doing, exploring different tones, different things. I'm sorry. It's what I wanted for... 30 years? Yeah, it's like close to 30 years. This is what I've wanted. Just like in the original series in the rerun days, I was like, can we get off this ship? This is a cool ship with a lot of heroic people, but there's a whole universe out there, and I want to go follow the, you know, Journey to Babel. Can we just like follow, pick a species and go follow them? Or go back to the Federation Council and let's do the West Wing of Star Trek. Nobody thought that politicians or government executive bureaucrats would be exciting, but the West Wing was an amazing series. And well, you could do the
like
same
an
thing
Articles
with...
of Federation TV series.
Mm-hmm. Not a phaser blast to be seen anywhere. Yeah.
Well, you asked why is this news now when he's been talking about it for years. I think one reason probably that it's news at the moment is because we actually have the series now. You know, we have Discovery and we have Picard and we have Lower Decks.
Oh, I was going to say we have this news now because
Prodigy.
Because we're all bored, and that's why it's news now.
Well, that's I think that's
aside
a bit
from
of
the
it as
Emmy
well.
Campaign. Yeah,
but it's no longer hypothetical. You know, if you roll back 5 years ago, it was hypothetical. How would you differentiate if you had a lot of different Star Trek series? Whereas now we actually do have all these things happening at the same time, and we have more to come, as we'll talk about coming up.
Well, I think a lot of people understood it, but the vast majority of people, it's like you have to see it to believe it or understand. And now it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, I've been using the buffet analogy a lot, which on the other side of the coin here are the people that still, some of them have platforms even, that still keep lumping, you know, if it's a Kurtzman, if it's a new show, if it's a Kurtzmayer show, they're all the same.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, how is Lower Decks anything like Discovery? What's amazing to me, and you tell me what your reaction to this is, and I know we weren't going to talk about Lower Decks per se tonight, but I'm feeling organically like I see more average fanboys and fangirls kind of joyously enjoying Lower Decks, the same people who still have qualms about Discovery and even Picard, but it's like people have just embraced, you know, it's fun, it's heightened fun because it's animation and people were a little about that. And there's moments when it gets a little sitcom-y. It's not, I don't even worry about Star Trek canon. Mm-hmm. It's times when, like when Captain Freeman got a little too manic about it. It's like, would a captain... even if a secondary ship get all upset, you know, does an ensign have to come in and tell the, is this like one of the Brady kids coming in and telling mom or dad what, you know, it's like.
You're talking about Ensign Bumford, right?
Yeah. Ensign Bumford. Yeah. So, I mean, there's moments like that, but overall it's just, I'm just usually smiling watching Lower Decks. But what's amazing about Lower Decks is they've done, it's like, now I get why it took 2 years to do 10 episodes. They've done an amazing job replicating the 24th century, you know, next gen era.
Yeah, the detail is really excellent.
Yeah, they've been slavishly, duplicative of it when they needed to, and then when they did need to jump into some new area, it totally fits. So anyway, I'm just saying. Yeah. I know a lot of people, they were worried about animation and comedy, quote unquote, and all of that, but I've just watching reactions and I think I see a lot of, now a lot of people are not and a lot of people don't. And I've seen some people, very thoughtful folks, say, I just don't like that kind of humor. And I want to go, at least it's not American Dad humor for Star Trek, I know, which is fine for American Dad and for animated sitcoms, but that's not Star Trek. And, you know, it's fine for that. And it's not that. And people were worried about that. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, I've said many times on here leading up to it that I was skeptical about an animated Star Trek that's a comedy, not an animated Star Trek. I've said from years and years, going back, maybe even since we started this network, that a Clone Wars type Star Trek animated show would be a great way to tell Star Trek stories. But once the comedy element was introduced to it, I started becoming skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've seen four episodes, actually, I'm really enjoying it. I think there are moments where
right.
I think the comedy's a bit silly, but for the most part, it's been quite good. And the attention to detail and the homage to
yes.
what has come before, particularly The Next Generation, has been fantastic. So I've been enjoying that quite a lot. And maybe the best thing about Lower Decks is finally we have episode titles on the screen again. Yes, at the start of the episode.
It's such a retro throwback. Titles on screens. How 20th century.
I really don't understand why they don't put titles on the other series.
It's trendy. Does Game of Thrones have titles? Does Walking Dead have titles?
But does Game of Thrones have 50 years of history behind it with multiple series that all had titles on the screen?
Are people going right? to be watching, analyzing Game of Thrones reruns 50 years from now?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't think there's going to be a GOTFM 50 years from now where people are talking about Game of Thrones in such great detail. But
GOTNG.
If you look, though, at talking about differentiating the series, if you mm-hmm. look at Discovery and you look at Picard, these two series, for me, certainly they're different from one another because of the settings and all, but in terms of the writing style on a basic level, the visuals, mm-hmm. the cinematography and all, you definitely can tell that they're being made by the same group of people.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like they have that kind of same feel to it. Whereas when I think about what they're probably going to do with Strange New Worlds,
yes,
I think that we're going to talk about Strange New Worlds more later, so I don't want to go too far into it. But that's a case where I think from a cinematic standpoint, it's probably going to feel quite similar. But from a storytelling and writing standpoint, I think it will be differentiated mm-hmm. more so than Picard and Discovery are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at Picard and Discovery, how do you feel, and like what kind of bleed over do you think is appropriate to keep that in-universe connection, and how much is too much? I think of things like the Cassilian opera that Agnes is listening to when she's mm-hmm. sitting on the hillside in the episode of Picard, which of course comes from Discovery. Those types of little things, the obsession with cyborgs, which I think we talked about last time, because in Lower Decks, we've got Rutherford, who recently became a cyborg. And
in all the Kurtzman era. Doesn't have a whole,
just in one, yeah.
It's like a glorified hearing aid.
I'm thinking about getting one of those for myself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
But, you know, that's an element that's a thread that has been running through all of mm-hmm. the modern Kurtzman era Star Trek. So what do you see there in terms of differentiation versus like a unifying element?
I don't know. Just tell the story. I mean, I thankfully saw a lot of, on one hand, it's hard to separate, as we said many times, the troubled birth of Discovery from the much smoother birth of Picard. The second kid is always easier than mm-hmm. the first kid, which is, it's so, these marriage and family metaphors are just amazing with Trek, a modern Trek. But yeah, the more they roll these out, they're more conscious. Part of this is Kurtzman, Heather Caden, and whoever they have involved. And there's some overlapping names, and there's a lot of new names coming along. But it's like, as they find their way, they're only human. And here's the thing. It's like, yeah, they've had movies, they've done TV shows, they've worked as Laura Deckers on, you know, like Alias. I mean, they've come up the ladder. He's come up the ladder when he was writing with Bob Orsi. He's been a Lower Decker, and then he's run shows. They've helmed movies, but nothing. And he did Transformers, he and Bob Orsi. And I'm not a Transformers fan, not part of that universe, but I read meta things talking about their Trek experience and dealing with a fan base, expectations, and directly, and how they went through the same kind of thing with the Transformers fan base. And it's like, you know, if you do something over and over, the definition of insanity, doing it over and over in the same way. But I think there's been, I hate to say the word growth, but there's been an evolution. But we are human. We don't start off perfect and then just stay at this perfect plateau. Hopefully, if we're going to be around, we get our foot in the door, we get a chance to do something, and then hopefully it's good. But there's always something you want to improve upon, and you do that, and you either do it by your own, I goofed up and I learned better, or you get feedback, from peers. You get feedback from your audience or your customer. You know, all that comes into a, that just takes some time. And sometimes, hopefully you go a whole life and you never stop learning or improving what you're doing or changing the point of view or shifting or reacting to what's going on in the world. And from his experience as a lowly show writer to a showrunner creator to doing features, coming back to TV and the experience with Discovery and all the pressure that was on them to help launch All Access, which was a whole part of it that none of these other series will ever have to deal with.
Right.
And then to have it blow up, have Brian leave and have delay and all the pressure and the spotlight and come on, you guys, what's with you guys? Like I said, the second kid was much easier. Now animated. Now we're going to have a second animated. And everything, I mean, I think I said this, told you this before, but like early on when people, sincere fans who were sincerely bemoaning the fact that Discovery was so dark and the characters were all broken people and why can't we just have heroes doing a mission of the week again and why? And then Picard injected an awful lot of things that people thought maybe have been, were missing, but then still had that same kind of feeling. And I said, look, guys, hang in there. They're going to unroll. They're going to unravel, unspool all kinds of shows. There'll be animated. So there'll be some TV. There'll be all kinds of formats. Eventually, the bright, shiny, happy crew on the bright, happy, shiny ship every week doing a new adventure standalone will pop up as somebody's crazy, radical new idea for a new format. And if somebody said, thank you, I've been waiting for this for 10 years or 20 years, I'll just say, shush. Just let them do the radically new format and tone show. And it'll be like the sixth or seventh one. And then when they, again, not news, they've been talking since they announced Strange New World, the day they announced it and had the video with Anson Mount and Rebecca and Ethan, part of it also. Anson's quote, he said, I think you're going to see a return to optimism and the old Star Trek storytelling. He said it like that. It's like, oh, right there. Yeah. Bang. Now, that went right past a lot of people, even though a lot of us talked about it then. But here again is Alex coming out and saying it again for everybody in the back row who didn't hear it 6 months ago or 3 months ago.
Yeah.
But I just tickled at how I was kidding about, you know, oh, someday it'll be like the radical new, the next pendulum shift will be towards standalone shows with Adventures of the Week. And well, perfect way to do that with Anson Mount's Pike that came out of nowhere that was not planned because Section 31 was going to be the new show.
Yeah, right.
So the fact that they're responding to the fact that shows they're not stupid. And they're not, they may be not stupid on several, they may actually earn their pay for the week, Scotty. I mean, with the stockholders, they may act, you know, like they're responding to a fan tsunami of affection and reaction.
Yeah.
Getting it about, well, maybe it's time we inject a little radicalism like standalone shows and, you know, just pure deal optimism again. Of course, it can't be too optimistic because hanging over Pike is the doom of he knows his fate. So that'll be there for all the people that don't want to give up Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, dystopia too soon.
Yeah,
but you're going to have him colored by that a little bit.
I don't necessarily think that that will hang over the adventures that he goes on now.
No, I mean, but it's going to, you know, there were running. Somebody said something about, you know, the original series. People look at it now. I mean, the movies had more arcs to them, you know, than the original series did-ish. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that was the nature of the beast then, and they thought nobody cared. And you're going to only watch it once and then have a rerun or two, and that was going to be it anyway. But the Next Generation for all, you know, the Dominion War was the first serialized shows. Well, it was that the arcs were like the slow motion serial, you know, like here's the Worf saga. He's discommandated. There are threads for all the characters.
Yeah.
Are Riker and Troi together? Are they not? You know, does Picard like kids? Is he warming up? I mean, there are those slow motion and then it heightened in DS9 and then Voyager kind of had them too. So, yeah.
But what's interesting about the platform now, with the streaming platform, is like you're saying here, they are reacting to fans. I very much believe that they had no idea that Anson Mount was going to be so popular as Pike. So it's not like they went into the second season of Discovery with the idea of like, maybe we'll do like a Pike spinoff if this goes well.
If anything, they were bracing for it to be Ethan and Spock, Ethan Peck and Spock.
Yeah, probably.
And all
right,
the promo was built, if nothing else, to sell Discovery, but in the back of their mind, they thought, well, if this catches on, it's Spock, and we'll do a Spock show or something.
Well, because the general public knows Spock. Like, everybody knows.
Right.
They don't know about him. They don't necessarily know much about the character or anything, but they know Spock is this character from this TV show, Star Trek. So you can sell that. People don't know who Pike is. Only fans know, and a lot of fans don't even know, younger fans.
Right.
But what I wanted to say about the platform, though, what is interesting is that because of the streaming platform and because of the environment where maybe you only do 10 episodes, you actually have a freedom to react to fans in a way that you didn't have in the days of just purely network television.
Exactly. It's not just, that's what I was trying to say earlier. It's not just a matter of taking an experimental risk and going to, let's do a series on Andoria. It's not just that you could even consider the format. You can pivot and twist and have a variety of.
Yeah.
You can react. So you can react as quickly as what happened to the reaction to Anson's Pike and go, okay.
Yeah.
Then we'll do. Cause at the beginning, it was kind of like, well, yes, there's been this avalanche of affection and demand and popularity that you cannot. It was almost embarrassing. It was almost like for a while there, Anson was kind of like, okay, guys, can you like, they have plans.
There are other people on the show.
I'm not, right? I mean, the world has changed a lot, but it's like actors, well, some of them can do it and they can get away with it. And it's certainly, now that we have social media, actors can do it coyly. But in the old days, it was like, you know, like Gene trying to get a third season goes and hires John and Bijo surreptitiously because it would be so unseemly for a producer to be campaigning for, well, now it happens all the time. And actors campaigning for roles. You know, Rosario Dawson's wanted to be a Starfleet captain for a million years. But Bob Picardo was out there saying, hey, put me in third season or second season Picard. I mean, it just happens all the time now.
Yeah, exactly. So before we leave this topic, I think we both agree that we, even though I said I have had reservations in the past about them maybe overdoing it or burning out, I think we both agree that this expansion is good and we're getting a lot of great Star Trek here and it's not being oversaturated because we are getting the shorter seasons. But do you see any risks to the rapid expansion? Again, thinking from a business standpoint?
Well, see, I don't even identify the adjective rapid with any of this. Especially, I mean, COVID's helped. If anything, COVID's going to make everybody hungrier. It's taken forever for the season that was filmed and only needed post-finished editing and scoring. You know, that's taken 3-4 months longer than need. Just that.
That has.
You know.
So when I say rapid, what I mean is that we had the Next Generation, and then after 6 years, DS9, and then after a few years, Voyager went into production. And then we had Enterprise. But like in each case there, we've probably got 3 to 5 to 6 years between a single project that went on. And then we had this long drought where we had nothing. And we had a couple of, we had a few movies that were like,
Chris.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we call it here. We had the JJ movies, but they're like 4 years apart almost.
Movies are like,
Then we finally, we get Discovery and suddenly it's like, you know, you get a series and you get a series and you get a series. And suddenly there's like all of these TV series coming. And not only that, but we've got audiobooks again. We've got novels coming out like crazy with audio, unabridged audio versions of all the books that are coming out. And we went years and years with no audiobooks. And back when we used to get them, they were abridged, drastically abridged versions. So suddenly it's just like Star Trek everywhere in a period of 4 years, we've doubled the number of series that we have.
We're not back in the toy aisle at Target and Walmart yet, so let's hang in for a few things. But
that's true, yeah. But that's what I mean when I talk about rapid expansion. And there's still a lot of projects on the drawing board that aren't getting much talk right now.
Well, yeah, I think the key is talk about the fallow years. I think I think it's always good. I mean, Rick Berman would talk about going to the well too often or too soon. And like we said, wanting to have just 1 year off between Voyager and Enterprise. That was his go-to phrase. Believe me, I had to edit it many times. But I think we are so far from anything approaching, just because we did have so many years of fallow times, just because the rest of the world is so saturated in pop culture franchises and aspirational things, and maybe even getting a little creaky. Maybe DC, Marvel, and Star Wars, and go down the list, are there's a little bit of fatigue there. But that whole, the whole 12 years of the fallow times, and when I'm not ignoring the Kelvin movies, but they don't apply to anything. I mean, they were good for fan base and letting the mainstream world have Star Trek to point to and talk about. That's their strongest suit. And yay on that. But otherwise, they don't really contribute anything to, well, the sliver of Prime at the beginning of 09 gave us a lot. Okay, so that's the whole premise of Picard. But for the most part, we're talking about episodic, and episodic Star Trek is where the rubber hits the road. That's where stuff happens. And it was 12 years without that. So anything else, to me, it's like a rubber band tension built up. And now that finally that's been released, because the first great fallow time was trying to get the show back in the beginning at all, which progressed through an animated series and progressed through four movies before the episodic happened with a new format. And then the other movies went along and petered out. And by that time they had bridged over and Next Gen was booming and we had a new boom. So it's like the pressure of this fallow time we went through was not the same as the first one. The first one was all part of the first revival cycle. And what will this franchise be? Now it's, what are we going to, oh, people are tired of Star Trek. No, you morons. You just have to do it right. So that they were, you know, talking about franchise fatigue in 05, measured on Nielsen ratings of a niche show. Again, as streaming and DVRing was happening and no one was paying attention to the shift in, you know, viewer patterns, just like the original series. Yeah. And we've talked about that before, right? It's like Star Trek was ahead of the curve and was a martyr for the change in culture and viewing habits and delivery platforms. So now we're here.
Right.
But that pressure of 12 years of no Trek, I think is just a big dynamic pressure. What's the physics term for that? And then it's like, let go. I think we are so far from exhausting that and burnout. Not to push it till we do have burnout. Let's not go crazy. Let's not go to the well 15 times too often. But I think we're so far, you know, and Prodigy's, not only is it a different tone and a different animation style and a different audience, it really will be more of a kid's animation versus Lower Decks is like, okay, kids, are you watching with your folks if you're younger than 12 or whatever? And some kids are 8-year-olds and they're loving it and they're, you know, whatever. I'm not trying to straitjacket anybody, but Prodigy will really be a YA, a young adult aimed kind of anime market feel, I think, in 3D land. But the other thing is it will be on Nickelodeon. It'll be totally off. It'll be another way that we're exploring a whole strange new world here. You know what I'm saying? We forget that. Like in the moment, we're forgetting that Prodigy will be on Nickelodeon. And I was trying to talk to some of our Portal 47ers and other folks in my audiences directly about like what are some of our American... We've had such a thing about, all access and it has to be on Nickelodeon or it has to be on Prime or they still don't have Short Treks and they still don't have Lower Decks.
Right.
So there's all those hiccups, but Nickelodeon is a pretty global brand, but are there still national differences country to country? And they said what I've gotten vaguely back is yes, there are some, but at least it's a global brand that can bring Prodigy to everybody basically all at once, potentially. I'm sure that Nickelodeon is a corporate. I don't know what the deal is. We'll see the details, but it's at least it's there and it's not back where it's all on CBS All Access, which has no global footprint and has to contract with others.
Yeah. At least in English speaking countries, suppose.
But I mean,
we don't have Nickelodeon in Japan. So.
Okay. Well, see, that's a thing. Yeah. How many countries is Nickelodeon in now? Will it try to go into some more in the next 2, 3, 4? There's all of that detail, but it's a hell of a lot better situation than All Access is what my point is.
Yeah, right.
Well, that having to jump through, you know, totally new hoops, like is happening right now with Lower Decks. The rest of the world is like, we'd really like to watch this legally, guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, but again, another new dynamic for this that will be even apart from tone and story and audience. another part of the picture. And then, yeah, when, by the time we get to Strange New Worlds and Section 31 and
reaching younger viewers, which brings new young fans into
back
fan
to the
base,
toy aisle in Walmart and
10,
Target.
20, 30 years from now, we'll be fueling new Star Trek series.
And hopefully new Trek fans. Their offspring. Like Next Gen has done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on and talk about some of the series that are in the works. We've touched on these a little bit as we talked here. The one I want to talk about first is Section 31, because Section 31, the way I look at it, is that the development of this series is as secretive as the organization itself.
Did you see they announced the name of the pilot, the title for the pilot? Lost in the Shuffle.
Lost in the Shuffle. Okay,
no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
That should be the name.
Thank you. The title is the metaphor. Larry. Yeah.
That was good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chris. We're here every weekend. Yeah. Tip your waiters.
And so Kurtzman talked about this with Variety. They do a streaming room Q&A thing. And he talked to them as, again, part of this kind of Emmy campaign that's going on. But he indicated that it is indeed on its way. It's going well. He says it may be a bit different from what fans expect, but the writing is underway. He said that Bo Yeon Kim, who goes by the nickname of Bowie, and Erica Lippold from Star Trek Discovery are working with Craig Sweeney, who was a consulting producer on Discovery's first season.
Yes.
And also worked years ago as a producer on Ira Stephen Bear's post-DS9 series, The 4400, which is a series that I particularly like. And you can also find Jeffrey Combs on that series because he's everywhere.
He is everywhere.
The picture of Ira where he's got his hands in the air like he's saying Magnifico or something, and he's got his hat on, the fedora that he uses for his avatar now, is a still. Yeah. I interviewed Ira for Trekland, like a 3 or 4 part video when he was working on the 4400, and we did a throwback look at DS9 back when it was a new thing to talk about DS9, the failed stepsister show.
Right.
Like, but this was so like 12-13, and that photo was a still I pulled for that. And I like a last year or two, I go, I guess you really like that picture from Martha. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, that picture of you, he goes, that was yours? I go, yes, it was a still from the video. Go back and look at the, he'd totally forgotten where it came from, but he liked it. So yay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you're welcome, photo. Ira. He didn't even remember it was mine.
All right. So they've been Bowie and Erica and Craig Sweeney have been working together on writing and a few others too, but I think they're like the lead writers, as I understand it. And
well, they are. Two of them are showrunners. Yeah, yeah.
The pilot has been written, as I understand it, and he says that's brilliant. He's, of course, very happy with it, but he thinks fans will be as well. And also, he talked about some of the online speculation about the setting and the elements of the show and said that no one is anywhere close to being correct, so he thinks that fans will be surprised.
I saw that story. Well, one thing, I've seen people go, have they shelved? So they always mention Section 31. It's Strange New World just rose up and blew everything out of the water, and they're like, we have to get on this. And then COVID-19 rose up and blew everything out of the water, so it's delayed everything. But it's just been, it hasn't been shelved. It's been bumped back. I mean, they committed so much to, unlike some of the other early rumored shows, the Khan series that Dick Meyer was talking about doing, Stephanie Savage and her producing partner doing an Academy 90210, a Starfleet Academy series that might not be painful, hopefully. Those were like, they weren't mentioned by CBS, but the trades, Variety and Hollywood Reporter, were mentioning these with like strong whispers, which sounded like names attached to the Academy show, which that doesn't happen unless they're pretty solid. And no one's talking about that, although Alex has talked about some other shows we're not talking about now. So it's like, it's, you know, the pipeline is there. It's just, it's a human thing again. We're not, I said this a few weeks ago on Trekland Tuesdays. It's like, we're not the prophets. We still have to do things in linear time. And we can only do, even with stage in LA and a stage in Toronto and a big stage in Toronto, we can still only, you know, now we got a pandemic to go, but they can still only roll out one or two or three again, that see, that's where I think we're not anywhere near danger of an overkill, a burnout would be, are we just, look, a 10-episode season. Let's crank out 5 of these at once. Let's have 5 teams, all, you know, 5 different showrunners, 5 different teams of writers, maybe 2 teams of art, all the art, you know, costuming, production design, visual effects, all the production right. aspects. We'll maybe share 2 teams and overlap 2 or 3 teams. But, you know, go. And have all that kind of cranking. Now, that would be overkill. And that would probably be tiresome. And there wouldn't be the oversight that they're looking for. Not, you know, not brand control, but some oversight to keep some linkage. If you're going to send 2 and 3 and 4 teams out. I mean, look how much separation was between Voyager and DS9. All of them in the Heart building together.
That's what I was about to mention.
You know, people would, I mean, literally, where Janet had her office, she had the mail for everybody, you know, the rack, the vertical, the horizontal racks. And sometimes the guys would like stop in and go, oh, wait, you're doing, they're in the same building and not know what the other shows are doing. And thus it was like a big memo from Rick coming down or something. So that's why I'm so. Well,
and there's also the famous thing about the fact that so much attention was on Voyager that the DS9 writers could just do whatever they wanted because they could not monitor both series sufficiently, and they were worried about the network series.
I was going to say, Chris, yes, Voyager was the network show. But see, that's why I'm heartened about not a chance of overkill, because yes, so it's like damn if you don't. We're thinking, well, they haven't talked about Section 31. It must have fallen off the radar. It's been canceled. No, they're focusing, and it's not like they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Like, can they launch 2 shows at the same time? Yes, but remember, Lower Decks and now Prodigy, they're working on 2 right now, and now they're stepping up Section 31, and he is talking about it. So they are getting there, but Bowie and Erica there were several Discovery people came by to see Mary Chifo when she performed with the Improv Generation, the Improvised Generation here in L.A.
Yeah.
And
I talked
to her just a little bit. Stuff, yeah. And she said they were working on the pilot for Section 31 in like winter of 2019, like January, February, March, whenever it was. So they've been on it. And here's the other thing. This, again, this is going to be the 4th kid or the 5th kid or the 6th kid. You know, you go, well, it's taking so long. Well, part of it was Strange New Worlds getting in the way, getting bumped ahead of it, and the COVID. But this is, you know, if you look at it that way, the calendar for its development is going to be like Discovery. But Discovery was the first kid, was the first child with all the pressure and the attention under the microscope, right? Launching a series. Well, Section 31 may have just as long a gestational R&D period, but no one's wringing their hands because there's 2, 3. It's just a different situation. Every show is going to be different. It's in a different birth order in the family. There's different things happening in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, the pendulum swings of culture and TV and media are going to be different. So, I mean, it's like, it's just a thing. And everybody that keeps lumping everything into the same, you know, they say the 18 Berman years, the Berman era. Well, the first year of Next Generation was so, the last year of Enterprise, they were shooting digitally. They were shooting just the first steps of being modern, you know, getting rid of so much overhead.
Right.
It was a totally different world in a lot of ways from that first year of Next Generation. But I mean, it was 18 years later, and things were rapidly changing all over the place, just as they continue to change. So 31's there, and that's the thing out of that story that I love is how he had a little bit of glee, and I'm glad he did, saying all the guesses about the show are different. And it shows that it's going to defy expectations. Yeah. And people, you say Section 31 show, you go, oh my God, well, that's going to be dark and dreary and gritty and underhanded. And if you think like the scenes of Seven and Bejazel, you know, during Picard were kind of or the between the cracks, weird place that the former border, you know, the former neutral zone area of the Romulan Empire falling apart into chaos. And that's the kind of vacuum that Section 31 will be operating in every week. And not necessarily so. So if they've got an interesting take, I'm thrilled. And if part of that has come because they've had this super long time to develop and they didn't have the pressure on them to do, and that will be a bonus of it. And they truly come up with something that's, and Bowie and Erica were like 2 of the biggest fan people on that poor Discovery early writing team trying to save it or make it, you know, come up for air and float after it'd been like undertowed so long. So I've got a lot of faith in them.
Well, another factor in the setting, it could be due to the fact that we have this little temporal problem where Georgiou was on Discovery when they went to the 32nd century.
Remember that, so did you?
We've certainly originally, before we got to that finale, we were of course thinking that it was just going to be a pure spinoff. Like what we were seeing of Section 31 in the season would just kind
It'll be a 2260s Section 31 show. Yeah.
Right. Knowing that Michelle Yeoh is the lead, knowing that Georgiou is the lead character, and now she's in the 32nd century, how is she going to get back to the 23rd century? Or is she? Or maybe is the series going to be set almost 1,000 years in the future? A Section 31 series alongside the third season of Discovery in that same time frame. Maybe that's what's different about it.
I just have this, I do not know, but I just have this hard time thinking that Discovery is going to stay there.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I've said this and people go, oh yeah, well, every Star Trek series finds itself in its third season. Well, really, this would be like a year and a half. This would be like middle second season if it was Next Gen or Voyager. It's nice.
Yeah, in terms of episode count, right?
Right, in terms of episode count. But I think Discovery, getting away from the whole 10 years before, all of that layer of angst and fan pushback, and a lot of it warranted, you know, choices that were made in a vacuum and then rudderless for a while, and then people just trying to get the damn thing done. And then the show kind of, I really think that getting away from that whole Kirk era thing and getting in and beyond Picard will be awesome. And the show will finally find itself, whether they stay 930 years in the future or they come back to some other time, whatever. But just getting that separation will unburden it from all. And people, when they read quotes from Alex or other people, some of the other producers, and they say, well, it'll unburden us from canon. They go, ha, ha, see, they're going to run rampant and ruin all of Star Trek. They don't mean canon totally. They mean the expectations of the environment of the 2260s and 50s. That's what they mean. Yeah. And then, yeah, repercussions to come afterwards. But no, I'm really excited about it. What's sad is like we've seen these, they teased this like 2 years ago because they had it shot so long ago, it feels like. Or they shot the opening episodes so long ago. It's been, Sinequa's had a baby and come back since then. Yeah, I mean, it's
That's
gosh. True. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing about going in and having their post-production delayed by the pandemic, they were barely finishing up the pilot right as that happened. They had been like filming, you know, for 6 months, 9 months before that. So it's going to be, it'll be feel like the original cycle of they started working in 2016 and didn't get it out, you know, for a year and a half later. It took forever.
While we're on the topic of this discussion that Kurtzman had and just the feeling amongst a lot of fans that Section 31 had been shelved because we didn't hear much about it, I came across an interesting article on the website We Got This Covered, and it's very recent. It's from August 7th.
Chris.
So it's very recent. But not that I buy into any of this, but this will be fun to talk about just a little bit because I wanted to know what you think about it.
You didn't give them any clicks, did you?
Maybe one to get the information, but I don't remember where I came across it originally. But anyway, there was a rumor that had been going around. It was a supposed leak from someone who, you know, like supposedly has inside information. And they had said that Section 31 had been canceled, which, of course, is not true. But what was interesting is that they also supposedly had information on what the setting of the show was going to be. And they said that the Section 31 series was going to be about Georgiou traveling back in time to the present day. That's important to note here. To 2020.
Right.
Or at least 2019. To stop Khan from rising to power. So apparently he's going to rise
inside
to
his
power
sleeper pod
several decades after the eugenics wars.
She's going to arrive on the Botany Bay.
And somehow Section 31 is going to stop him. What do you think? Would that have been a good show? Would you have enjoyed watching that, Larry?
And that will go. She's going to spend a whole series running around the Botany Bay trying to unplug his canister. I mean, what does that mean?
Botany Bay.
Botany Bay.
Botany Bay.
Oh no! Good thing they have to have seatbelts on these cargo containers. Anyway,
right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a big, wide, not so wonderful internet out there, Chris. We watch these bozos so you don't have to. Yeah.
But Larry, wait. There's more.
There's more?
This isn't the only bit of rumor that was in there. They also claimed that the Starfleet Academy series, which you mentioned earlier, that's been nixed. And they also said that Star Trek Destiny, which I believe CBS actually did trademark the name, Star Trek Destiny. I don't know what they're going to use it for. They claim that that concept was reworked into Discovery Season 3, and therefore the project's been killed because they don't need it anymore because Discovery Season 3 is the storyline that Destiny was going to be. That's what this person
said. But all we knew about Destiny was that it was a name trademarked.
Right. That's all we knew. So I don't know where they got that from.
I think that could have been an alternate title for Prodigy, but you know, whatever.
It could have been.
I do not know that for sure, folks. Don't take me at my, yeah.
Now here's perhaps my favorite, Larry. They also said that Star Trek Revolutions, which was supposedly going to fall into the superhero genre to compete with Marvel and DC, it was going to be a story about a Starfleet officer who bonds with a symbiotic being and develops heightened abilities, is now off the table. Now, I think that's the plot of Moist Vessel, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of,
sort of. Kind of, sort of. I don't know.
Well, the only thing I heard about Generations was there was going to be a boy band every week playing in their mess hall.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be in there.
Because bad ideas never die.
They also said that the concept of Revolutions was that the protagonist was going to be an LGBT woman and that Australian actress Ruby Rose, who played Batwoman on the CW series of the same name, was being eyed for the role. And also that John DeLancey was going to be on the series as Q. And of course... I'm reading this and thinking, this all sounds like pure fan speculation and imagination to me, and it makes no sense. And I can't imagine John DeLancey was going to sign on his cue for some series about a symbiotic being called Revolutions. But this is just a kind of a fun thing that I just had to throw it out there for you, Larry, because I know how much you love these types of rumors in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah. People love to say, you say, this is just a rumor. Like, suddenly it gives it credence. No one ever stops to think that, hi, I made up my own rumors. It's like, yes, rumor is something that's thought to be known, but rumors don't exist until the first person says it. And then the second person starts to pass it along. But now everybody has a micro, you know, 20 years ago, I said, everybody's got a keyboard. Now they're all a journalist. Now everybody's got a mic and a webcam. So now we're all, you know, you could create the rumor and start spreading it both to hundreds of people.
Under different identities. We've heard these,
yes. Starfleet Intelligence. Can you hear me? It's like, yes, you can, what is it? You're the judge, jury, and executioner of your own rumor. You're only, you know.
Right.
People forget that the word rumor means something is not substantiated. It has nothing to do with where it came from. There can be rumors. Yes, production teams, we know. We can look back at history and look at the evolution of ideas and things. It's the think tank. It's the, you know, people brainstorm ideas. That's what creating anything is. And if you took a snapshot 3 weeks into the think tank around, like we do on Trek Files a lot, of Next Generation, lots of ideas were considered and tossed out. Some of them even came back. This week's show, Chris, did you know that in his very first thoughts, Gene thought about maybe his new Star Trek in 1986 might pursue a cast where the lead character is not a captain, but like a first officer? Dump, dump, dump.
Trek Files.
Anyway, the point is, rumors can merely be the things considered and, you know, the road's not taken. So it's not like there's all that fodder isn't there. But to come up with, you know, and here's this week's 47 new rumors. It's like, whoa.
Which have now been canceled.
Yes.
That's what I have to say there.
Yeah.
All right. So let's return back to serious things that actually are in development, Larry, and talk about Strange New Worlds, which we talked a little bit about earlier.
Strange New Worlds, or the project that will give your Google search database something to go to besides Saturday Night Live when you start to type in SN. Yes, and your Google jumps up. Yeah, I'm waiting for that. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That was so important.
So obviously, as we talked about, Anson Mount's performance as Pike resulted in this outcry from fans for a dedicated Pike series, which some people maybe had thought about before, but it wasn't something that was on everyone's wish list necessarily. But it certainly was a few episodes into the second season. And no doubt, Ethan Peck and Rebecca Romijn's performances as Spock in Number One had a lot to do with that as well. And on May 15th, CBS All Access announced that they had ordered the series. So they were able to react quite quickly to the fan response to what was happening on screen and get a series underway. And Kurtzman has outlined the approach that they are taking for Strange New Worlds. As we talked about earlier a little bit, it will be a return to Star Trek's roots, more episodic, more optimistic storytelling. We're going to get the Planet of the Week stories that made the original series so popular and were part of The Next Generation and especially Voyager. And so that I'm very excited about because I do enjoy the serialized storytelling of Discovery and Picard, but I also really miss that old style of Star Trek. And I'm really excited that we're going to get that back. So in your opinion, how did Discovery inadvertently breathe new life into the classic Star Trek format?
Well, again, I don't want to make too big a thing out of it, but I think a lot of this is just the dynamic. You know, I go back to my old pendulum theory. The original series was awesome. And then when Next Generation caught on, it became yesterday's news. And nobody even wanted to talk or do or see the original series actors for years. And then when the 24th century started piling up with DS9 and Voyager and the audiences is splitting up, and around that time, suddenly the phrase was retro cool. The original series was retro cool. And that was the breeding pot that J.J. Abrams brought back a movie franchise. And so they were going to do the exact same thing, only different, you know, with the alternate universe. And now the pendulum has swung back, and this is something I've been watching the last few months. I've been loving reading about how people modernize or looking at the original series. But my point here is, I was half kidding but half serious. I mentioned it before, I won't repeat it all. But yes, talking about how at some point the modern, you know, not just this is what they want to do, but everyone working on the shows from Alex down is very conscious of where TV and media is right now and all the different formats. And what are the dominant genre shows? What do they see as their competition honoring Trek? But what did they think they had to live with? And this dystopian, I mean, the easy two are Game of Thrones and Walking Dead and go down the list. And if that's the lens, now most any Star Trek fan would say, no, that's exactly why Star Trek was big in the 60s and 70s, because it was not dystopian. It was hopeful and aspirational and all that, and you missed the boat. Well, they've got one foot in each world about we've got to compete and look like we're relevant to today and all of that. And the darker side of even some of the Marvel, you know, the DC universe and whatever Doctor Who is even, I mean, whatever all the genre franchises are doing. I mean, I was one that was trying to argue, go be the shining beacon and stand out. And, you know, if you make it, they will come. But things happened the way they were happening. So almost as therapy for myself, as much as fandom, the people I would see and be interacting with are their chats and tweets and whatever. And that kidding about, oh, don't worry, soon this will be having a optimistic show will be a radical idea. And I was tongue in cheek, But that's basically what I think has happened. Also, again, what I said before, they're not dumb. I think I want to give them kudos. People have just written this team off. Alec, if anything else, look at the record of what they have done. By the second season of Discovery, they realized holocoms where you know where the furniture is in the person you're talking to's room. that makes no sense. Right. And I was kidding. You know, I said, they're going to figure out that holocoms and touchscreens cause cancer. Well, kind of they did it where they came up with something else. And so it was kind of without making the whole series about retconning the visuals, they kind of started backing up and doing that.
A little course correction.
Yes. Some tweaking. Yeah. Again, given the hard birth, Craig Sweeney, that's awesome that he's involved with this because he wasn't just the first. His credits carried out the first season, but he was like in the first generation of writers that was on their way out the door in the middle third of the season and really wasn't there the last third of the season. Not because he's a bad person or a bad writer, but just because the development dragged out so long. The original writers who had, you know, like 1 year contracts, they were into their year and a half and they had to do something.
Right.
So, or another project called them somewhere else. They got a chance to do something else. So we've talked about all that before, but that's why that was awesome. But it was so funny to see that it wasn't just the fact that Ansem Mount makes this huge impact and causes the whole production calendar, all one future item on the schedule besides the new other animated show. It's like they bumped one show for that to react to it. So yeah, they're being savvy. They're looking at it. And I think after 2-3 years, of seeing not just the screamers and the moaners and the toxic tubers, but also a lot of well-meaning fans expressing themselves very civilly going, I think they're so caught up in being competitive and putting a product out there that they think has to respond to the market, but also at the same time, what they thought people were missing in their Trek. And now that they're in a whole world of now we've been given a green light to flesh all these tones out to fill out this buffet table. It's just amazing to me that it's basically come back around to, oh, look, here's a whole new flavor. Optimistic mission of the week, planet of the week storytelling where I was being facetious before. That's exactly what's happened. So, yes, it all makes total sense to me. And it's one more sign that they're being very savvy and they have no ego to bruise. To after a certain point, that they're not above backing out of this corner that they painted themselves into and going, because part of that's not that they're horrible people who are learning their lesson. They're human. And all the Star Treks have had bumpy roads getting started again after a big gap and a new team gets trained. So, it's these people that want to just string them up. It's like, no, and look at the evolution through the movies, through this. People forget that Alex got away from the Kelvin movies. After the second one, you know, whether he felt burned or he just felt hemmed in or whatever. And they called him back to do this. So, you know, I give him a lot of credit. And they are responding. They're responding as these shows unspool.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, part of it is that they're able to because you get such instant feedback these days.
Yes.
If you think about the Berman era, you didn't have that ability to get such instant feedback or make course corrections as quickly as you do now, just because we didn't have social media platforms. And
plus, it's part of the culture.
And
It was radical when Ron Moore would talk to AOL people on the AOL board for that time period, like the mid-late 90s.
Right,
People would write their questions. Yeah. Before, it was like Rick did his column where he talked about what he wanted to talk about in the magazine every 2 months, which was then like 4 months behind. And he would go out, you know, good old Rick, he would go out on a limb like, well, we think we have some very interesting adventures coming up with some really exciting guest stars.
I know. It was always like the same thing.
That was
every
the Bermanese. Yeah.
Was like...
Thanks a lot, Rick. And, you know, but he was of the era where social media, you know, the internet, forget social media, just the internet and message boards and people emailing rapidly and memes and people taking frame grabs and building websites. That was like, I don't want to say a threat, but that was like, whoa, calm down, you crazy out of control kids.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, there was the great purge around the time when Voyager started.
Oh, yeah. Where
they went around and kind of shut everybody down. So, yeah, it's a different world now. But the Kelvin films, because there are so many fans who don't like those films, and anyone involved in them has sort of been put on a blacklist, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter what they do. And that's certainly what's happened to Alex Kurtzman. But even talking about the films, I mean, he may have departed from that project after Into Darkness. But if you look at Star Trek Beyond, even there, you see course corrections. Like mm-hmm. that film feels much truer to the original series than the two films that came before it. So even there, and maybe a lot of that is Simon Pegg's fandom bleeding over into the story.
Why would they worry about the original series, Chris? It was a completely different universe. Why do they need to worry?
Yeah. But you see there, you know, the, even there, there's course correction. So
yes.
The development, it's too bad that people write people off based on mm-hmm. one project or two films or three films or whatever. And just don't pay attention to the development that's going.
And am I saying these things are beyond critiquability? No, not at all. But yeah. That's why lumping all of these in. And the more new series roll out, the other animated, Prodigy, and then Strange New Worlds, and then Section 31, and then whatever the next couple are going to be, the more series that are out there, the harder it's going to be for people to keep talking about these Kurtzman shows as one tone, like one monotone, when they're going to have... I mean, DS9 and Voyager were so different, but people at the time would lump them together. Or they would talk about how... DS9 was the weird, you know, the darker, grittier show. We don't want darker, grittier. It doesn't go anywhere. Right. And then, oh, thank you. Voyager is just like Next Generation, except not in friendly space. So, which for the writers and creatives was hard to do. You couldn't just go pull Klingon and Romulan robes out of the closet and do most of the time and do something. But
no, but you could like pull Romulans through tiny wormholes and... You know, you could get them on the show when you needed them.
Find those Ferengi.
So,
yes,
Larry, we talked earlier about the serialized nature of Discovery mm-hmm, and Picard mm-hmm. and how not only Star Trek, but television in general these days has had a darker tone. Yes. The world's a very dark place these days and it can be very overwhelming. And I came across a story that was written in June by Richard Edwards on Total Film. Talking about Strange New Worlds, and what he said kind of sums up my feelings, so I put it on the outline here to share with you. Mm-hmm. What he wrote was, now that Discovery and Picard have pulled the franchise into the 21st century, the course is cleared for Strange New Worlds to celebrate Star Trek's past, the modern-day franchise's hymn to positivity. The depressing state of planet Earth right now doesn't mean that every TV show has to be a joyful celebration of life. There will always be room for complex drama exploring the dark side of the human condition. But the optimistic ideals of the future Trek was built on, a world of tolerance, listening to other points of view, and working together towards a common goal, are all messages we could use right now. If Star Trek can't work in that space unashamedly, then what on earth is it for?
Yes.
And that sort of summed mm-hmm. up like what I'm hoping for in Strange New mm-hmm. Worlds. It's fine that we have those dark tones in Discovery and in Picard, although I kind of wish that it wasn't always the entire universe and like all sentient life that's at stake all the time. Like the stakes don't have to be that high all the time.
Yes.
But... one reason I love going back and watching The Next Generation, especially, is that you've just got these episodic stories where they go to different planets and there are social messages. And at the end of the day, even though you might not always agree with Gene Roddenberry's interpretation of what you should do, at the end of the day, the ultimate goal mm-hmm. is to have a message of optimism and to learn to work together and mm-hmm. to at least have that dream that the future can be better.
And our similarities are greater than our differences and all of that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And rationality means something and you can science the hell out of something and save yourself instead of just reacting, you know, shoot from the hip and all that.
Right.
Yeah. That was an interesting, It's, and as I was reading that quote, it's like, we have all these images of the original series and how it was embraced immediately, you know, it became this secret hit, cult hit, you know, among the crazy fan base. Mm-hmm. But as we've seen over the years, the ratings were not that bad. It was not this crazy show that got big in the of course, it got bigger in the 70s, but it had good ratings as a business model. It was second. Sometimes it was third, but it was often second place in its slots. And a lot of times it was in first place of the hours. So, but let's remember how much the world changed. He conceived the show in 63, 64. They shot The Cage in late 64. It's turned down. They get a new pilot. They redo the pilot in 65. They do Where No Man. And then they wait a year. It's an early pilot. They wait a year. And then it gets picked up for fall 66. He's done The Lieutenant with the cooperation of the Marine Corps until he did his racism show, which was censored. But what I'm saying is that's where the world and the culture is. Now, Kennedy's been shot, and people are kind of reeling from that. The Cold War is going on. Vietnam is still this noble, quasi-noble thing, and Johnson has just ramped up sending... 65 was when he sent the first big expansion of boots on the ground in Vietnam. But people hadn't reacted to... The most philosophical, idealistically leftward-leaning people were, like, not happy about that, but the bulk of the country was still not where it was, you know, just 2 years later. But so first season is 66, second season is 67. The Save Star Trek campaign, the big one, happens in the spring of 68. Like, you know, they announced that it's been renewed in March of 68 when the Omega Glory is airing. Okay. That's March. Then look what happens. Bang. 2-3 weeks later, Martin Luther King's assassinated. Then bang, the Chicago riots and the Democratic Convention. Then bang, more and more and more and more campus protests against Vietnam are happening. Then Bobby Kennedy is shot in June. I mean, the culture exploded. And my point here is we look at Next Gen as this thing that people, you know, they embraced it for the positivity and the future, the forward-looking, the rationality, all the aspirational, representational, diversity-minded aspects of Star Trek were kind of there in these low doses, and people glommed onto it. But it's when the culture around the show exploded that when people really glommed onto it. And if anything else, people were even more hyper the next year when it did finally bite the bullet. And then by 69 and 70, you had the what's it ship run aground and the modern environmental movements created just in 69 and 70. So it's like the culture and the world changed. And then you're watching ratings by demographics and not raw numbers. So it's like all these aspects of the culture change just as Star Trek, really not in its early days, but just in time for it to become this sacred cow, golden calf. That implies a falseness. People found this thing there. If they didn't find it, they quickly found it. The viral of the day was high school kid and college kid telling their friends. I mean, that was how things went viral then. So, you know, and writing letters.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Everything blew up and coming home. And the smart, savvy first initial syndication buyers who bought it and put it on their stations at the beginning in 69 and 70. And it was there for kids to come home to after school. It was there for college kids and high school kids to find. And lit that fuse that exploded things within 2 and 3 and 4 years because the country had exploded into activism and all this. And then, you know, Nixon and Watergate, and all of that was happening. So it's like the country changed even while the original series was being produced. So this, you know, just since the time of Discovery coming out, and we look around the world and see a lot of bleakness in that, that I'm trying to think where I'm going with this, but my point is that we look back at the original series as this beacon of light in a dark world. In the beginning, it really wasn't. It was some really subversive concepts, but they were like low doses. It's just that very quickly the world needed all the subversively positive, forward-looking thought that it could get. Because there was such a deficit all of a sudden, and the culture was hungry for, especially youth. And that's where we were. And that's we entered Discovery's phase in the modern era Trek, though, already there.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well,
I don't know if any of that made any sense.
We did.
But it's the same as the original series in our time, but it's actually different. Yeah. And I think the original series didn't know what it was getting into. Gene and Bob and all of them didn't know what they were getting into. Gene wasn't a guru yet. He was just a producer trying to do a show. And he was pissed that some of the things he had done on Have Gun as a Western and The Lieutenant as a military drama, he was pissed that he couldn't do them as the
right.
as the TV culture was getting blander just before the TV culture blew up with the rest of the country.
Right. And so then you turn to science fiction where you can couch those in mm-hmm. some kind of metaphor mm-hmm. and then you can talk
or
about
pink
them
and purple people
and get
or
it by
whatever.
The censors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Larry, you ask, so I don't know if that made any sense to the listeners, but it was sure fun to hear you talk about it. I'm just kidding.
It's just, well, it's something that's like, as we look back and we make things in easy, simple little boxes, what I'm trying to say is the public and even the fan reaction to Star Trek evolved and evolved very quickly. Is what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, as the show is going on. And I mean, you said that even as Discovery started,
and then compared
we were
to today.
Already at that place in the world, but we're in a much more difficult mm-hmm. and more trying mm-hmm. place in the world today compared with when Discovery's
yes.
first season aired. So you're seeing, like you were talking about, how the world changed during those 3 years that the original series was on. We're in the same situation now in terms of the world is changing a lot, but we started at maybe a worse point.
Yes.
And it's getting worse.
But I guess what I'm getting back to full circle is if Strange New Worlds is going to be a little bit purer light, a little bit brighter light, then yay.
Yeah.
And I think it's not so much an epic academic, oh, what's the rest of TV doing? It's like, oh, this really is Star Trek DNA. We get it. We've put some other shows out there, so you know what we're capable of doing. So let's just take a risk and go back to this crazy radical thing, which was what Star Trek was all along.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. That's the point, right? Because the one, it's not a complaint, but it's an observation that I have about Discovery and Picard, is that there is this little bit of like looking around at what else is going on in TV and maybe what fans are expecting from television. So we got to have that in there also.
Or newer fans or newer eyeball, that. Newer potential audience. Yeah. Right.
You know, we talked, you and I talked on here a couple of shows ago about the Romulan thread mm-hmm. in Picard mm-hmm. and how had that kind of Game of Thrones element to it. It's just sort of like, we've got to throw this in. We have to have this bit of angst in here and doesn't necessarily benefit the story that much.
Where we all talk and hiss at each other for
right. I do hope that with Strange New Worlds that they just don't worry about what other TV is doing. Let's mm-hmm. just say we're going to go back to the classic Star Trek model. We're going to have optimistic stories. We're going to visit new worlds. And we're going to talk about important issues, just as every Star Trek series has. And just as science fiction does, but we're going to do it in the old formula. And it's going to feel a little bit out of place on the current TV landscape, mm-hmm. but that's fine because this is a Star Trek series. And let's just do that formula. And you know, we've got 50 something years of clout behind us. So we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Henry Alonso Myers is the showrunner for Strange New Worlds, and he's got a couple of credits out there now, and he's made like one public pronouncement here in the last 2 or 3 months. But I'm just amused that this was news. This was news for the Emmy voters, I guess, or something, because the day they announced it was not a very well-kept secret. I'd heard creative guys.
Oh, no. But this has been out there for a long time.
Well, it's obviously if they don't do this, it was just partly a matter of when. The fact that they bumped Section 31 to get going on this now before COVID quashed everything for right now. But people were creatively working on the prep and the R&D for the visuals and the productive end of it.
They should do a Section 31 series where for the entire first season, Section 31 is searching for a vaccine for COVID-19.
In the 2020s? They're time traveling back and forth?
Yeah. After they stop Khan from rising to power, then they can cure COVID-19. Yeah.
So there's this big set they're building that's going to be like this oval of black and white where Georgiou and her second banana actor are going to like fall into this thing every week. But right before they have to get up and go in, try to get home again one more time, they all say, oh, boy. And then they fall back into this big trap. It's almost like a trap of time. It's almost like a tunnel of time.
That's exactly what's going to happen, Larry. And I'm pretty sure that you were told not to reveal that.
Oh, damn it.
And one of these days, you're going to learn not to share these things before the official announcements are made. So.
Let me guess. Starfleet Intelligence is listening again. Damn it. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, Larry, to wrap up our discussion, let's just quickly touch on Prodigy, which we've talked about a bit.
Yeah, we talked about it.
There
already.
Was one bit of news. Matthew and I had David Mack on Literary Treks a week ago, and we talked about his new novel, More Beautiful Than Death, which is a Kelvin Timeline novel. And the reason I mention it is that David is a consultant on Prodigy, and although he couldn't share any details, he did mention that his work on that is continuing. So we know that that's progressing well. And for those listening who don't know, Prodigy is a CG animated series, and it's going to air on Nickelodeon sometime in 2021. Right. But the little bit of news that came out, and this is not necessarily connected to Prodigy, but maybe it came out in Kurtzman's Emmy promotion tours that he was doing. He mentioned that they have hired the composer who did the score for the Short Treks episode Q&A. Mm-hmm. Her name is Nami Melumide. Hopefully I'm not mispronouncing her name. She's quite young, 32-year-old Israeli-Dutch composer. And I mentioned that she's quite young because she has a really impressive resume. She has composed music for more than 130 films and TV series. And I also wanted to point that out because some people are assuming that she's been hired to score Prodigy because she has done some work in the past on some animated series. Of course, when you've done 130 films and TV series, the vast majority of that is live action. So I think that's a little bit of assumption going on there. Mm-hmm. It's possible that she's going to be scoring some episodes of Strange New Worlds. I'm not sure. But if she is indeed going to be like the main composer scoring Prodigy, that will make her the first woman composer hired to lead a Star Trek series.
And I love this quote from Alex. Stop me if you've heard this before. He's talking about the theme and the tone of the music. So the idea was, how do we touch the theme, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and then give it its own sound? I mean, we're laughing at this.
You got to give it its own sound, Larry.
Yeah, but be exactly what we've had before, noticeably similar, but different. See, I mean, no, I don't. We're laughing about this. I'm laughing at the superior intellect. But it is, it's the problem. It's like, okay, the good news is you've got this amazing franchise that's been around for decades. The bad news is you've got this amazing franchise that's been around for decades, and you're trying to do something new with it. And a lot of people can, having a concept idea is great, but now flesh it out. You know, what is that going to look like and sound like and feel like? And
And he did go on to say that she really found the joy in what she composed for Q&A, and that she wrote the piece that plays over the end credits. And he said that's one of his favorite pieces ever for anything that he's worked on in Star Trek.
Well, take that, so, Michael Giacchino. Okay.
There you go. Well, actually, as I understand it, she got brought in to work on Short Treks because Michael Giacchino is trying to find younger up-and-coming composers and give them opportunities. As I mentioned, she's already done a lot of work, so she's had many opportunities. But this is great that, you know, Giacchino is doing that. But that's something that Star Trek franchise, especially when you talk about directors, for example, you know, they've always really been championing giving people opportunities and nurturing talent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, so we've run through a lot today, Larry. We've talked about...
And that's the end of my
expanding
speech.
The universe. We've talked about Section 31 and Strange New Worlds and Prodigy and all those incredible things that could have happened with Revolutions and all those canceled projects, apparently. But yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on where we're headed?
I'm headed into my new iMac here soon, Chris. So that's where I'm.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. For everybody following my saga of my poor long situation.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because we talked about it on the other side of the room. And I was hoping to remember at the end of our recording today. I just wanted to look at your current iMac and say, second star to the right and straight on till morning as you sail off into that bright sun for the final voyage of this iMac that you've been using for what, like 10 years
well,
now?
Yeah. Well, it's since 2013. It was refurbed and I bought it and refurbed it. Yeah.
The new one is going to be, we're going to be christening that soon, or you're going to be christening that soon on all your other projects.
Yeah. I have a bottle of 2265 Dom Perignon that I'm going to, yeah. Reshoot the opening sequence and just start with that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hopefully, if all goes well here overnight when I do this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's this whole, the sum total of this up is, it's funny to, it's on one hand, some of the, you know, there are surprises that happen and that's wonderful. There's been a lot of surprises with Lower Decks and I'm glad for that. And I'm intrigued by what I was kind of going, yeah, 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 Section 31. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now I'm intrigued to know what's going on with that. And like I said, it's not for lack of any faith in Bowie and Erica. They also did all the major development. They were like the Dorothy Fontana Vulcan-ness, Ron Moore Klingon-ness for Saru and Kelpians. Uh-huh. They did all the major Saru Kelpian, you know, the short trek and right. then the, you know, those episodes. So just as one thing, and a couple of the writers that I've been able to interview, and they can hold their own with quotes and episode titles with any fan. So I'll just say that as far as cred goes. That doesn't always come across, but so I've, you know, I'm looking forward to being surprised by that. But a lot of what comes out of these, and I realize it's the press of the press tour. And like right now, the goal is Emmy voters, Emmy voters, Emmy voters. And I get that, but it's always funny to wake up and see your Star Trek news. And it's not the new, well, sometimes it's the news sites being insane with the toxic yahoos. But if they're just conveying what's being said, you're going, this is news? I mean, in some of these bits and pieces, it's like, consider the audience. But I laugh a little bit, but then you see fans reacting to it like it's the first time they've heard. And that's okay. I was preaching a minute ago about you got to let people find things out when they find it out. So you can't jump on people for being a little behind the first curve, but some of this stuff isn't news, but it's fine. If that means more people, it's penetrating, you know, and getting out there. So anyway, but the thing that really is funny is some of these big picture ideas that were things I was wishing for 20 years ago and 30 years ago when I was a kid or when I was, you know, came to LA and first got to write or when I was writing my fan stuff that got me in the door to just, and it's like, and then when I see the fandom reaction against it, you know, or some segments or people, sometimes they're not such, people aren't against something just to be against it. Some of them are very sincerely, it comes from fear. They're fearful of having the thing they love messed up. And if there's anything I can right. do to assuage the fear, but when it comes down to the point of something that I wanted years ago and I'm, you know, wetting my pants that it might actually happen. Same thing when they announced Enterprise would be a prequel. I was like, yes, yes. And then to see people bash prequels, it was like, bash it if it's not good, but don't bash the concept. I don't understand this. So anyway, some of those reactions to things that I'm kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this. This really is going to be a golden era. We really will have a buffet of different flavors and people can like, it won't just be two flavors with a movie chaser once every 3 or 4 years. It'll be, look, 4, 5, 6, and they're not going to come out and make you, you're not going to overstuff in one course. They're going to bring one course out and then let you have an hour to eat and then bring the next course out and let you have an hour to eat so that you're not overstuffed. Hopefully. So I'm wishing yeah. we could reset the clock. We could skip over the Kelvin decade, go back to the 90s, go back through the fallow years. Can we like back? Cause I'm going to miss a lot of this. I intend to live forever, but I still think that, you know, I wish we hadn't lost the last 20 years of Star Trek. Yeah, I wish we could have been doing this then,
yeah.
but you know, we didn't have streaming services and yeah. all yada yada and all of that right. then. So. As my third grade teacher used to say, you're wishing your life away. So there you go.
Well, Larry, the fact that you're wetting your pants over all this makes me very glad that we're doing this over Zoom and you're not sitting next to me here in my studio.
Yes, because I know. Ha, see, all these years I tricked you. You thought I was really there when all I was doing was using a very super secret, smart Section 31 advanced pod spore ship hollow viewer where I can detect the furniture in your ready room and sit there with you.
I was wondering. Yeah, I was wondering how you always knew where the chair, because I used to move the chair around the room to try to trick you, and you always found it.
But, you know, I thought I'd better rail against it those first episodes of Discovery so I would fit in, because heaven forbid I not fit into his typical fandom. So I thought I'd better argue, even though I'm sitting here obviously employing the technology right now.
Right. Well, my final thoughts are that I'm...
That was as weird an ending as I think we've ever had. Yeah.
That's saying something. I'm looking forward to seeing these things come out. I'm especially looking forward to Strange New Worlds, not only because I loved Anson Mount's Pike, but because I really want that episodic Star Trek back for a change. I'm interested in seeing Discovery Season 3 because I think it's going to be an interesting story. I kind of feel like it's going to be possibly a bit of an on-the-nose commentary on the current world and how we're seeing great power collapse, but we will see. I think it's going to be interesting anyway, and I'm curious to see if they stay there because, like you said earlier in the discussion, I kind of don't think they're going to stay in the future forever. I don't think the show is going to remain set in that time frame permanently. But who knows if they'll come back during this season or in a future season.
Or when they come back, where they'll come back to. They could still be in a future that's just not that far future.
They could come back to where they were and find that no one at Starfleet's answering their hails.
Oh, that old line. I mean, yeah. Quick, beam down and find McCoy. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Beam down and find Jadzia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do whatever you got to do.
Of course, it's Discovery, Larry, so it'll be beam down and find Michael Burnham.
Okay. Well, she is wandering around, you know, with her new guest star looking at starless flags. So she is separated from...
That's right.
They were going to do that at some point.
The flag is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I love the way that they've taken the flag that we know and they've just reduced it to where you've only got this, what is it, six, I think, worlds left on it.
Delaware and Rhode Island and Alpha 3. Yeah, that's all that's there.
Yeah, that's all that's there, yeah.
I just crossed streams.
Yeah, all right. So anyway, great that we could talk about this today. I know you've got a lot of stuff coming up, Larry, so tell people where to find you, what's coming up in the next few weeks.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, well, you know, LarryNemechek.com is always a great place to go. You really want to get on my newsletter, sign up there. You can get a freebie recording of my interview with Robert Butler, who directed The Cage, which is an amazing, amazing piece of history, if I do say so myself. But you want to get on my newsletter because I'm doing surveys and polls and things, and also just to keep up with news. Portal 47, we have specials there. That's our mini-con all year long. The Trek Files is my podcast from Roddenberry every Tuesday, along with Trekline Tuesdays Live, my live show on Facebook and YouTube. And on Saturday mornings at 10 Pacific, you can jump in, you know, 1 Eastern, 6 British summertime. You can jump in with Dr. Ali Mattu and I on Life Support Live, which is going boldly in uncertain times.
Now, he's a real doctor,
he
right, Larry?
He is the real doctor. You figured it out. So, yes.
I had to say it. I just
one
couldn't.
One of us is a fake doctor. I know. See, one of my taglines is finally working. Yay, yay. And I want to thank everybody.
I know it's getting old because I say that every time, but it's just me picking on Larry. That's all. That's why I have to say
No, please do. It's called promotion. It's called marketing. What do you mean, Chris? Here's your 20. Thank you.
I did speak over you there, Larry. So tell everyone again the time.
Oh, no, it's at 10 a.m. Pacific on Saturday mornings. So hopefully when we started this, it was a canceled WonderCon panel. When we started this, it was like, let's go to the weekend. No one's on weekend. Well, that was before GalaxyCon and the entire world, you know, and lots of groups and clubs and doing watch-alongs. But hopefully 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 Eastern, 6 British summertime, 7 Central European summertime is a good time for people to jump in. We go 90 minutes stretching to 2 hours, but we have chat, live chat, and people can live Skype in with us. The bottom line that I'm very excited about, COVID time has led me to multi-streaming now. So please, everybody, we start on Facebook, but you can join us on YouTube, and I appreciate anybody who can go over and like and subscribe on my YouTube channel. I was late to the YouTube game, but I'm trying to catch up now, so I appreciate those. And down the road, October 26th, we're going to be announcing the guests soon, but right now, please save the date. Wednesday evening, October 26th, is the fifth anniversary open house for Portal 47. And the open house is the annual open door thing. We'll have a guest, an awesome guest. If it's possible, a guest that's even more awesome than the ones we have every week. But this is, we throw open the doors. It really is a virtual open house. And everybody's, you know, come get a sign up for a freebie ticket. But we'll do that night. And I'll have some surprises that night, too. But the date, please save it, is Wednesday, October 26th. So that's coming up. And a couple other things coming up, too. But we don't have them finalized yet to say. But yes, thank you, Chris. I hope we're in there pitching and slugging and trying to keep up with all the new Trek and also keep everybody connected in crazy COVID time.
Yeah, which is important because at least Star Trek gives us sort of an anchor during this time to keep us grounded and keep us going
and
through all the difficulties.
And away and virtual and, you know, the online and social media, but our virtual world now, which is funny. Like I feel like I pioneered this with Portal 47 5 years ago when I used to have to explain what free conference call was or what Zoom was to people. Now, what? How does it?
Right.
How? What? Well, that's one thing. Now the whole world knows. So,
yeah.
Welcome to our world, guys.
Yeah.
Well, what have you been doing lately, Chris?
I've been trying to survive, as always. But I've actually been podcasting a bit more.
I was going to say, it feels like you're doing a better, having a better time of that lately. So, which is good.
Maybe so. I mean, I'm still doing the same two magazines and that's taking up a lot of time, but I've managed to get the time back to normal a little bit because it really shot up as COVID-19 really set in, as the pandemic really set in. Various things happened and staff became short and budgets got restricted and so forth. And actually I was putting in double hours on each issue of the magazine, which made it even more impossible for me to do anything. So at least that's getting back to at least what was considered normal before. And that's given me a little bit more time to podcast because I am at home all the time now. So I don't have that 5-hour round trip commute that people know that I famously have had for many years. As a result of that, I mentioned earlier, Matthew and I recorded a new episode of Literary Treks, which is out right now. That's our interview with David Mack about More Beautiful Than Death.
Awesome.
And I have launched a new podcast, a Star Trek Universe podcast called Interphase. First episode, we talked about Lower Decks a bit. And the second episode, which will be out by the time you hear this episode of The Ready Room, is a look back at the original series with my friend and colleague who is watching it for the very first time.
That's awesome.
In 2020. So you get to see like new eyes, 21st century eyes.
I love those. Yes.
Looking at 1960s creative through our modern lens. So that's kind of fun. Matthew and I will have some new episodes of The Orb coming to you soon. And I also have some other projects in the work. And as you've probably noticed, we've rebranded the network. We have a new logo. We have spun off the 602 Club into its own wing where we will be doing more podcasts about non-Star Trek things in the months and years to come. And here on the Star Trek wing of the network, everything that you're familiar with will continue. Our shows are not ending. Some of them are on hiatus at the moment as we retool a little bit, but everything will keep going. So we are entering our second decade as a network with a lot of exciting things happening. So that's what's going on with me.
Oh, you and your snazzy promotional taglines, entering our second, because it's the truth. It is the truth. Yeah.
It is the truth. Yeah, we are into our second decade now. And amazingly, Larry, you've been around the whole time because you were on one of the single digit episodes of this show, The Ready Room, when we started.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's quite amazing.
I need to go back and listen to that and see how bad I was at the beginning.
How bad I was.
Here, Chris, here's some more facts. Hey, Chris, here's some more facts.
Larry, you were much more seasoned than I was, though, at that point. So, in terms of sharing,
hey, Chris, here's something you didn't know.
With people. That's right. Did you know that the original pilot of Star Trek was not picked up by the network?
Really? Did you know that they recast the lead for the second pilot?
Oh my God, mind blown.
Yes, there you go.
I don't think we were that fresh.
I don't know. Oh yeah.
All right. Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts on today's show, there are many ways that you can do that. The best way to have a conversation is, of course, to go to Facebook and go to the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group. If you're not yet a member and you need to find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field and it should come up. It is a closed group and there are three questions that I need you to answer so that I can let you into the group. And one big reason we do that is that we want it to be for listeners so that we can extend the conversations from the podcasts. We try hard to make it different from just the typical Facebook group because there are so many of those. So please do answer the questions so that I can let you in. You can also send us email if you prefer that method. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact, and use the form that you find there. Choose a show, choose the Ready Room, and then that will come to me by email. You can find us on Twitter, where our username is trekfm. That's also the name of our main Facebook page, facebook.com/trekfm, and we have an Instagram account. Trekfm is the username there also. If you'd like to find me in social media, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, so you can find me there at C. Brian Jones. But you can also find me on Facebook in the Babel Conference and in other places. If you'd like to help us keep these shows going, it does take a lot of money to produce the shows and to distribute them, to pay for the bandwidth, to pay for the infrastructure. And we can definitely use your help, especially right now. The coronavirus pandemic has really been hard on us as people have had to, you know, pull back, obviously, to get through things. So if you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out how you can help. As part of our rebranding and retooling of the network, I'm also rethinking the perks that we have and the home of those and trying to provide more benefits coming up soon for patrons. So that information will be coming soon. One thing that's very popular is the Patrons Roundtable, and of course that will be continuing. And in that perk, you actually can get on mic with fellow listeners and hosts from the network and just talk about Star Trek the way we do here on the podcasts. And we publish those in our master feed and in its own feed out for listeners to consume out there so other people can listen to them. So that's a great way to support the network and have fun talking about Star Trek at the same time. So I'd like to thank everyone who supports us here, and thank you to all of our associate producers. Well, Larry, we've wrapped up another Ready Room. I think we went over 2 hours, as we always do.
Oh, no.
But it's so much fun talking about Star Trek with you on mic.
Even here by long-distance smart hologram projection.
Yeah, it's wonderful that you're always here in the Ready Room because, again, you know where all the furniture is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have really good long-range scanners for that, but don't tell anybody it's a secret. Oh, that was supposed to be a secret. gosh, Chris, I guess it's time to stick an Emmy voting pin in it because the Ready Room is done. Why do I even try to do too much on my poor iMac?
You put all your energy into getting prepared beforehand this time,
right,
on the tech side,
right.
You forgot to be ready to answer this question.
I actually had my head into this. I still don't have what to stick in it yet. I realized 10 minutes ago that I wasn't there yet. Okay.
Well, just as long as it's not a wet diaper.
yeah.